Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate
Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimadi Bhakti Padanta Swami Nityanamini Namaste Sarasvata Deva Gauravani Pracharane Nirapashesha Shunyavadi Pashatare Shutarane Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Shivasvati Gauravakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare Hare
Hare Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam Canto 3, Chapter 29, Verse 21. Aham sarveshu bhuteshu.
Aham sarveshu bhuteshu.
Bhut atma vastita sada.
Bhut atma vastita sada.
Tam avagyaya mam matya. Kuru tercha avidambanam. Aham sarveshu bhuteshu.
Aham sarveshu bhuteshu.
Bhut atma vastita sada.
Bhut atma vastita sada.
Tam avagyaya mam matya.
Tam avagyaya mam matya.
Kuru tercha avidambanam. Aham, I, sarveshu, in all, bhuteshu, all living entities, bhutatma, super soul in all beings, avastita, situated, sada, always, tam, that super soul, avagyaya, disregarding, Mam, me, matcha, a mortal man, kurute, performs, archa, of worship of the deity, vidambanam, meditation. Translation, I am present in every living entity as a supersoul. If someone neglects or disregards that supersoul everywhere, and engages himself in the worship of the deity in the temple, that is simply imitation. Purport, in purified consciousness or Krishna consciousness, one sees the presence of Krishna everywhere. If, therefore, one only engages in deity worship in the temple and does not consider other living entities, then he is in the lowest grade of devotional service. One who worships the deity in the temple does not show respect to others is a devotee on the material platform or in the lowest stage of devotional service. A devotee should try to understand everything in relationship with Krishna and try to serve everything in that spirit. To serve everything means to engage everything in the service of Krishna. If a person is innocent and does not know his relationship with Krishna, an advanced devotee should try to engage him in the service of Krishna. One who is advanced in Krishna consciousness can engage not only the living being, but everything in the service of Krishna. Translation, I am present in every living entity as the super soul. If someone neglects or disregards that super soul everywhere and engages himself in the worship of the deity in the temple, that is simply imitation. So, as we all know, the Bhagavatam defines the Supreme Lord in three broad aspects. That is Brahman, Paramatma, and Bhagavan. But this is actually just one Supreme Lord, so we shouldn't think that they're different. Now, of course, the Brahman looks completely different because there's no form or qualities or activities at all. So it looks quite different from the features of Paramatma and Bhagavan. On the other hand, Paramatma and Bhagavan are very similar because we have Vishnu in the spiritual world in Vaikuntha, and it's exactly the form as Mahavishnu or Garbhadaksha Vishnu or Shiradaksha Vishnu. And the same form exactly, with four arms and Shankha Chakra and decorations, etc. And even the same associates. So they look exactly alike. So there's no problem in understanding they are one, like we say, expanded forms of one being. But they are labeled differently because they function differently. And the Brahman is still part of the Supreme Lord. That function is even quite extreme, and that is almost no function, because we can say it is a realization of the Lord without his shaktis at all. It's due to his shakti of Sandini Shakti that we get the spiritual world, we get the form and qualities and activities of the Lord. We take that away, then it's Brahman. So it is the Lord, but without the realization of any of his shaktis operating. So then when we add the shaktis to it, then it takes different forms. It may take the form of Paramatma, or Vishnu in the spiritual world, or when we start varying the amounts of bliss, etc., then we get the different forms of the Lord, like Narasimhadeva and Rama and Varaha and Hayagriva and Krishna. But it's all one being. So we shouldn't think of the worship of the Lord as being worshipping many different forms. They're actually one being. Nevertheless, we distinguish the Paramatma from Bhagavan by the fact that Paramatma functions in relation to the creation, maintenance, and destruction of the material world. That is Bhagavan in one aspect, rather than the aspect in the spiritual world where his absorption is in his pastimes with his devotees. So in creating the material world, he's absorbed in that type of activity of creating the material world, destroying the material world, etc. So that when he does that, when Bhagavan does that particular thing, then we call him Paramatma. And he expands in three forms, Mahavishnu, Garbhadaksha Vishnu, and Kshiradaksha Vishnu, who pervades everyone's soul. It's Antaryami. So it's all actually one person. Ultimately, it is Bhagavan, but when he pervades all the living entities, etc., and he simply witnesses them, he's not manifesting all the qualities and activities he does in the spiritual world. So his function is slightly different, so we distinguish him for that purpose. So, in devotional service, we don't worship Paramatma so much. It's not we reject him, but because we're interested in establishing a relationship with the Lord and serving him eternally in the spiritual world, we concentrate on the form of Bhagavan. Even though we can say if you're a Vishnu worshiper, the two would be indistinguishable. But if you're worshiping him in devotion, then we call him Bhagavan. And if we see him in his aspect as creator of the material world, then we'll see him as Paramatma. We call him Paramatma, but actually it would be the same form. Yeah. So, in any case, it's the Bhagavan form that the devotee is interested in. He establishes a relationship with the Lord, and through that he offers his service, and eventually he realizes the activities of the Lord in the spiritual world. So the deity form in the temple, of course, is the same form of Bhagavan, and we're offering our worship and objects to the Lord, and establishing an affectionate relationship with him. So we see Bhagavan, the form of the Lord in the Archamurti is Bhagavan. But here, there's so if you don't see Paramatma everywhere, then you're actually not doing deity worship. So how is it possible that Paramatma, that Bhagavan is dependent on Paramatma? It looks a little bit of contradiction here. Why would we have to see Paramatma everywhere? So, no contradiction really, but the idea here is that we have different types of devotees, and those who are, neophytes or kanishtas, they at least accept the Lord. So they accept, okay, there's a Supreme Lord, and we should worship him and establish a relationship with him. And then they accept the form in the temple. Well, that's good, because some people don't accept the form for the Lord at all. And they also won't accept the deity form of the Lord. Say maybe it's material or whatever. So a person who accepts the form of the Lord in the temple, the Arch of Vigraha, and he worships, that's good. But his conception of the Lord may also be somewhat limited. So, therefore, we have this definition mentioned in the 11th canto of the Kanishta Adhikari. He worships the Lord in the temple and sees the Lord there and respects him. But that's his limitation. He doesn't see anything else. He doesn't see the devotees. He doesn't see the form of the Lord everywhere. It's Paramatma everywhere. He doesn't regard the devotees as objects of respect and valuable for advancement, etc. So he's quite limited in his vision. But he's made one very significant step in accepting the Lord and accepting the Arch of Vigor as non-different from the Lord. So that's a good quality, and therefore is accepted as a devotee. But we also know that we need a little bit more knowledge, and we have to expand our vision a little bit. So the Madhyamadhikari is defined as the devotee who, of course, accepts the Lord in the temple and worships the Lord, but he also understands that the devotees of the Lord are also worthy of respect. And they have a valuable contribution to his devotional development. So the Madhyamadhikari not only sees the deity in the temple and gives respect, he associates with devotees. And of course the other aspect of the Madhyamadhikari is he avoids the non-devotees because it is not favorable for his devotional advancement, in spite of the fact that he's supposed to see Paramatma everywhere. So Paramatma's in the non-devotees as well. So we'll treat them all equally. No, he doesn't do that. He avoids the non-devotees, associates with the devotees. So this is the Madhyamadhikari level. So this level is considered to be a very, healthy level of devotional service. It is a person who comes to this level that can advance nicely and quickly and get to the Uttamadhikari level. He not only sees the Lord in the temple, he understands that all jivas also are respectable because there is a Supreme Lord present there. But he also understands that the devotee of the Lord is worthy of great respect. Because not only the Lord is there, Bhagavan is also there. It's not just that Paramatma's in the heart. Otherwise we would have association with wild tigers, etc. But we have a special association with the devotees because he has accepted bhakti and the Lord is personally present there as well. So this is the special respect given to the devotee. On the other hand, the jivas who are opposed to the Lord and don't accept the Lord and rather commit aparad against the Lord, those devotees, those persons are not favorable for his devotional service. Asatsanga is not favorable, so he avoids those persons in spite of the fact that Paramatma is still there. So he avoids them. He understands that they're also jivas and the Supreme Lord is present there, but is not favorable for his devotional development. So therefore, he avoids those persons. And persons who are neutral, they're not opposed to the Lord, they do not commit aparad against the Lord, then he shows mercy to them by giving them guidance and giving them teachings about bhakti. So this is how the Madhyamadhikari acts in relation to different jivas, as well as in relation to the Supreme Lord. Whereas the Kanishta he only sees the deity in the temple and he worships the deity. He does not give regard for anybody else. So we have to expand our vision and understand the Lord is present, and he's present in all living entities and with different degrees. He gives respect to the devotee because the Lord is present there, and he manifests himself in the form of bhakti. And therefore, by associating with devotees, we get devotional advancement. So in this way, the devotee on the Madhyam Adhikari level, he associates and gives respect to all living entities, but he regards them in different ways according as they are favorable or unfavorable for his devotional advancement. The person on the Uttam Adhikari level also gives regard to all living entities, but he acts differently than the Madhyam Adhikari, because there is no regard for what is favorable or unfavorable, because he's so fixed in the Supreme Lord that nothing can influence him to the contrary. And because of his prema, he sees everything in terms of prema. So therefore he thinks of the demon in terms of prema also. And therefore he sees everybody as equal. Ultimately, everybody's a devotee of the Lord. Everybody's in prema. So that is the vision of the highest person. So the Madhyam Adhikari, he has to get to that level, but he does so by making these distinctions between the favorable and the unfavorable, etc. And therefore, he associates with devotees. He avoids the asat persons. And he preaches to the innocent people. Unfortunately, as devotees, we live in the material world, and many of the people that we associate with are not devotees. So this becomes problematic. How do we survive if we have to associate with non-devotees and asat people all the time? So the answer is that the asat sangha is not just coming near a non-devotee, so that's not so bad. What is detrimental is establishing close, intimate friendships and relationships with those persons who are asat. And doing so, by creating that bond of equality, we tend to absorb their qualities and their attitudes and whatever like that, so we get influenced. So it's that close association with intimacy that will do that. So we begin to share everything together. We share our food, we share our ideas, we share everything. And then suddenly we end up with their ideas, their asat ideas as well. So that is what the asat sangha is. So we just pass them on the street, it's not a problem. Of course, if we want to be very strict, that would also be there. And we see that as there in some, for instance, the... in India, they select the next acharya, the next Shankaracharya, when he's a little boy. So they do not allow anybody near him at all. If he goes in public, he's surrounded by like people, guards. Nobody can come close to him. There's no association like that. So in that way, he's protected. Same with the Madhva sannyasi. He's selected when he's a child to be the next head of the Madhva. Nobody can come too close to him. We're not so particular about that. However, it's the close association which becomes dangerous. So the example is given of a spatika. Everybody knows what a spatika is. It's a quartz crystal. And it is clear, a good one is clear. So it's like glass almost, it's very clear. So it has no color. If we put it near the red mridanga, then it looks red. If you put it near the tulsi plant, it'll look green. If we put it near yellow flower, it'll look yellow. Put it near a blue flower, it'll look blue. Put it near the black microphone, it takes up a black hue. So it seems to very easily accept the color of that which is close to it. People are like spatikas. They go near the asat person, they become like the asat person. If they go near the sat person, then they become like the sat person. So people are like spatikas, changeable according to association. So this is both good and bad. It's bad if we have bad association. It's good if we have good association. So we have to choose very carefully. So this is one of the ways in which a human being can actually change. Normally human beings cannot change. Very difficult for them to change. And throughout life they'll struggle to change, but they cannot change. And just go on in the same manner, same habits, the same actions, same words, same... You get stuck in one mold, and throughout their life they're all the same, and they can't change their behavior or anything. So it looks like the karma is controlling them, and there's no opportunity for free will at all, because people are stuck. But one good, powerful influence that can help the change is sangha. So normally people are in a bad association, so therefore that's why they can never change and they keep their bad habits all along. But if they choose a different sangha, then they can begin to change. But it has to be, quite close association. And we develop relationships in that sangha, then the change takes place. So therefore it's concluded that the wise man carefully chooses his association, because he knows that we're very easily influenced by other persons like the spatika. So therefore we have to choose very carefully. So that is why the Madhyamadhikari, he is careful in his association. He avoids the demons and he associates with the devotees. And this way it's healthy for his advancement. However, the Uttamadhikari is not like the Spatika. He's unchangeable. He's simply emanating prema everywhere, and nothing can influence him. Like Krishna comes in the material world, he could go in the worst place, but he's always Krishna, and he's not influenced at all. So that is the position of that elevated devotee. Nothing can influence him in the material world, no matter what association is there or whatever. He's always the same, like that. Therefore, the Madhyamadhikari has to be careful about his association, and he associates with the devotees and not with the non-devotees. So that asat sangha means that close association with the other person. So who's an asat person? So there are various types of asat persons. Some are philosophically asat. So Mayavadis are called asat for us. Other people in India may not consider them asat at all because it's good satsanga. But for us, it's asat because it's unfavorable for bhakti, for the Vaishnava. So therefore, it's asat. In fact, Lord Chaitanya says, you go see a Mayavadi, you have to jump in the Ganga and take a bath to purify yourself. Just seeing the sight of him is impure, so to speak. Like that. What to speak of establishing a friendship with him. So anyway, the Mayavadis are asat. Atheists, those who don't reject God completely and become aparadis, they are asat. So we have to avoid those persons as well. Worshippers of devatas who are completely devoted to devata worship rather than Supreme Lord, again, asat. Because that's also offensive to the Lord. They reject the Lord in the favor of the devatas. Persons who are involved in material enjoyment beyond the rules and regulations, who are hopelessly absorbed in sense gratification, those persons are asat. In this way, we have some guidelines for those persons who we should avoid having close relationships with, otherwise we get influenced by them. And on the contrary, we take the other association, that is association with devotees. So that is favorable for our advancement. So one of the principles of sharana gati, or surrender, one is to accept what is favorable and reject what is unfavorable.
So that is what the devotee is willing to do when he becomes a devotee. If he's surrendered to the Lord, then he will accept that principle of avoiding the materialists and associating with the devotees. That's favorable, and one is unfavorable. So he accepts that as a principle. And that's good for his devotional advancement. So, in this way, the Madhyamadhikari can advance. The question arises, however, how do we preach to the demons and the materialistic people if the offense to the holy name is don't preach to the faithless persons? So in that verse in the 11th canto, it says you can give mercy to the innocent people, but you avoid those who are opposed to the Lord, which in other words they're aparadis. So we have to judge very carefully who to preach to, and see if they are opposed to the Lord or not opposed to the Lord, and or if they're somewhat favorable, whatever. However, we see that Lord Chaitanya even delivered the aparadis, like Jagai Madai. How do we give mercy to the aparadis and the demons, etc.? Because we want to be merciful like Lord Chaitanya. But at the same time, we cannot commit aparad and preach to the faithless persons, because obviously the aparadis are faithless. So how do we preach to the faithless persons? It's aparad if we preach to the faithless. And yet we have to deliver the demons also. So the answer is that the name of the Lord is very powerful, so that if they hear the name, eventually they can become favorable and they lose their demonic mentality. So that's how we preach to the faithless persons. We don't speak to them about the name, but we expose them to hearing the name. And through that constant exposure, then they become favorable. Then we preach to them. So that is how we approach the unfavorable persons. We just expose them to the name, let them hear the name. And through that, eventually they get a change of heart. So in this way, everybody is somehow getting the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. First in hearing, and then by actual preaching from a devotee. This is the conduct of the Madhyamadhikari. So he's able to see and appreciate devotees, and he appreciates the Lord everywhere, as is explained in this particular verse. Whereas initially a person will simply accept the Lord in the temple. This, of course, it doesn't really apply to devotees that we know, the devotees that we see. This applies more to persons who, by tradition, have accepted the Lord as a family tradition. So they go to the temple and they worship the Lord and they respect the Lord like that. So that's finished. And they go back to their house like that. Or they may have their own deities in the house by tradition, and they're worshiping the deities for generations, and they do that as a matter of custom or whatever like that. And they respect the Lord also, but they don't have so much understanding. So that's why they're in that position. But they're not offensive anyway. They just don't have the understanding. So those persons can be raised up, as Prabhupada mentions in the purport. They can be they can come to the Madhyam level if they get the mercy of devotees who are on the Madhyam level. Which means that they're not opposed to the Lord, so we can preach to those persons. They're favorable, and they also accept the Lord. So one can preach to those persons directly and associate with them, etc., and give them proper knowledge and proper mode of conduct and activity in bhakti. And they can advance. So it's not so difficult to get that person from the Kanishya to the Madhyama level, because they're already favorable and they already accept the Lord. So therefore the Kanishya level is not bad. It's just that they have to get the association of devotees and come up to the next level. So not so bad. The persons who don't know anything are the innocent people. They're not opposed to the Lord, and they don't accept the Lord. They just don't know anything. That's all. Ignorant. Okay. So those persons, we can also approach them, and we can preach to some degree. But of course, the preaching is going to be quite simple, because they don't understand anything about Supreme Lord. They don't accept, they don't reject, whatever. And not like the person who's the Kanishtha, who already accepts the Lord. So they're a step down from that. So we have to adapt our preaching also to that. They may accept something, but they not may accept something impersonal, you know, which is quite common in the modern world. Yes, we accept something spiritual, but to have a form of the Lord who's blue, that's a little bit difficult for them to accept. So we have to modify our preaching to different types of people also, from the innocent to those who are Kanishtas or whatever. So we have to use our intelligence also in preaching. So this is the we could say the privilege of the Madhyamadhikari, that he can use his intelligence to preach to different persons in different ways. And he can preach even to the demons by simply exposing them to the Hare Krishna or Prasadam or whatever like that. And other persons he can choose to preach in another way. In any case, the Madhyamadhikari is interested in delivering all people. So he has the intelligence to treat different persons differently and that way effectively raise them above the worst standards and get them up to the Kanishtha and then to the Madhyam level. So that is the job of the Madhyam Adhikari. So it's the Madhyam Adhikari who is the main preacher, the one who spreads the mercy of the Lord. And the Madhyam Adhikari is not at the highest level, but he's the main person who does the work of spreading the message of Krishna. Not the Uttama Adhikari, who sees no distinctions. Yeah? Of course, there are exceptions to that, like Narada Muni. But in general, the Prem Bhakta is so absorbed that he doesn't preach. So the main preacher is the Madhyam Adhikari, who's not on the highest level. But he is empowered by the Lord. So therefore, he's worthy of great respect because he is being given something by the Supreme Lord and he distributes that to other persons. So therefore, the Madhyam Adhikari is a very valuable stage. And the persons in that level are the people who spread the message of Krishna everywhere. So very valuable main preacher. So Krishna empowers them, and then Krishna also doesn't even tell them what to do. He lets them do it. So they're free to distribute the mercy as they see fit. So they don't get directions from Krishna, distribute to this person, don't distribute to that person. He leaves it up to the individual. Yeah. So he leaves it to our intelligence to decide where to give the mercy at what time. So this is also the mercy of the Lord. He gives us some independence to distribute our mercy as we see fit, which is actually Krishna's mercy. So in this way, the main deliverers in the material world are the Madhyam Adhikaris. They're the ones that are raising the people's consciousness upwards. So therefore, worthy of great respect. So in the Bhagavatam, we'll see that the devotee is always respected. And it's one of the key elements that you have to serve the devotees and serve the great devotees, etc. And that is the key for advancing in devotional service. We see that we have Shraddha, Sadhu, Sangha, Bhajana, Kriya, etc. So after Shraddha, we take association of devotees and get the mercy of devotees, then we begin the practice of devotional service. But Sadhu Sangha doesn't end there. So as you go through Nartana Vritti, Nishta Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, and Prema, there's always association all the way up to the top. So how does a person get from Bhava to Prema? Generally by association and mercy, he gets to Prema from Bhava even. To get to Bhava from Asakti, then he has association also. So all along the level there is this Sadhu Sangha. And how does he get Shraddha? Also by mercy of devotees. So, in the beginning there is mercy of devotees, then there is Shraddha, then there is mercy of devotees, then there is Bhajana Kriya. Then we go to the different stages and there's association all the way through, all the way to the top. And after one gets to Prema, what happens? There's also association. So it's eternally there in the spiritual world as well. So we know it's not just Krishna there, it's many, many devotees are there and they're all associating with each other. So Sadhu Sangha is also an eternal principle. And it also is the very beginning of devotional service. But to get to Shraddha, the Sadhu Sangha is not intentional. When we come to the Madhyama Nikaya, then it's intentional. We know that it's good for us, so we do that. The Kanishtha doesn't know it, so then somebody has to give him the mercy to raise him up, and then when he becomes Madhyama, then he understands the value of association. If he's not even at Shraddha level, then he doesn't know anything, and he doesn't have any interest at all one way or the other. So if there's no Shraddha, it's very difficult. So that's why the devotees, they can't preach to the faithless person because he doesn't want to listen, but they can give mercy to him in the form of hearing or whatever like that, or prasadam or whatever. That's their, the mercy that the devotee gives to those persons. By that, they get the Shraddha. Once they get the Shraddha, then they become interested and favorable. Then we can preach to them directly. So, therefore the devotees have a duty also to create Shraddha by distributing unknowingly to people and influencing people through bhakti. And so this is generally the Madhyamadikari, so the persons who are energetic to do this. They like to permeate society and give to all persons in this manner. So this is the way in which the devotee advances. So the Madhyamadikari stage is very favorable for us. So this verse says, well, if one is only at the Kanishtha stage, that actually his archa is vidambanam, it's fake. It's imitation, it's not real. So, in other words, it's good in the aspect that he accepts the form of the Lord, etc., but it is so limited. He doesn't understand the full potency of the Lord and how the Lord empowers the Madhyamadikaris to do preaching for him, and how they act as the mediums for Krishna's mercy. So we don't appreciate that, then our advancement is quite limited.
Okay, any question now?
Who? Oh, well, we put him on the highest level. Of course, we can't verify anything exactly, but we put him on the highest level. As I said, the Uttamadikaris also, there are exceptional cases where they do preach. Now, and sometimes they won't at all. They're just, we don't even know who they are because they're not interested in preaching. And they may not even look like devotees. Say, so we have examples like Bhamsi Das Babaji or someone like that. And he may not have been at the top level, but maybe in Bhava level like that. They may act completely beyond our expectations, what we expect a devotee to act as. So we may not even recognize those higher devotees. But on the other hand, we do find examples of the highest level devotee. They also, in certain cases, they will also do preaching work. So then in the Jiva Goswami gives the example of Narada Muni. He's, of course, a Shaktivesh avatar, always in prema, but then he also does preaching work and is, you know, goes throughout the material world giving mercy to fallen souls. One could theoretically go in that direction, but the problem is if we go to Brahman and realize that we may get stuck there. So that's the whole problem there. So the devotee is not so worried about that. We understand that these are features of the Lord, but we don't particularly have that as our goal, to go to Brahman and then to Paramahamsa and then to Bhagavan. So we worship the Lord as Bhagavan, and we're trying to establish a relationship with him. So obviously, it's got nothing to do with Brahman, because Brahman has no qualities and no response at all. And Paramatma is only the feature for creation of the material world. So we're establishing a loving relationship with Krishna. That's a Bhagavan. So the very nature of bhakti is Bhagavan. When we realize Bhagavan and bhava and prema, automatically the positive aspects of liberation or Paramatma realization are automatically there. So it says in the Nectar Devotion, the quality of in the six qualities of, unique qualities of devotional service, one of the qualities that manifests in bhava is moksha laguti krit, that it, one disregards liberation. Why? Because he surpassed liberation, he's seen the Lord. So the bliss from seeing the Lord is so much more than liberation that he's gone beyond that. And of course in bhava, the ahankara is destroyed. The knot of material identity is gone at that stage. So he's surpassed liberation and therefore he's not subject to the gunas and maya, etc. And he experiences bliss with the Supreme Lord. So he's whatever positive aspects of Brahman are there in terms of liberation is there. At the same time, he disregards it because it's so insignificant in relation to the bliss with seeing the Lord and serving the Lord directly. Of course he wasn't a demon or anything like that. So Lord Chaitanya is most merciful. But then again, we can see that incident is also an example of mercy. He's giving some instruction by that. Not that he's condemning Haridas ultimately, but he's showing the proper conduct of a devotee, that's all, and how we should act in devotional service. So therefore he had to reject him because he said his conduct was not proper in doing that. So that's all. So he's just setting an example of proper conduct of the Vaishnava and how he has to be very careful and how he associates with women, etc. The two things go together, the external manifestation of qualities and actions, which may not be so good, then that's some kind, we say a symptom that the devotion itself is also not so high. So we have persons who accept the Lord to some degree, but then they may not be following regulative principles, they may not be doing so many things, and they may even have sinful activities. So we can respect them because they do accept the Lord, but at the same time their understanding of what is bhakti is rather minimal. So we respect them, but we have to avoid such persons. So we have various levels of respective living entities. So we avoid the demons, and then we preach to the innocent, and then we associate with the devotees. And then among devotees, if they also have elements which are unfavorable for devotional advancement, then we would also have to avoid them. In other words, they have devotion, but they also do sinful activities. So therefore, how can we associate with them? We get influenced, then we will also come down to that level. So we have to be careful that also of such persons, such devotees. So this particularly refers to like the sahajiyas and other persons like that who claim to be devotees, but then their conduct is quite different from the conduct that Lord Chaitanya established. So to some degree, we do have to make judgments based upon our intelligence. We have to observe things in persons, and according to that, we have to decide who to associate and how to associate. So we have to have a little intelligence also. And to get the intelligence, then we also have to understand scripture and what is proper conduct of a Vaishnava, what is improper conduct, etc. And see the different levels of devotees and see who's a non-devotee, who's a devotee, etc. Just as we also have to see who's a demon, who's not a demon, and preach to the devotee and don't preach to the demon. And we can also preach to the innocent person like that. Or the Kanishtha Adhikari. I think we have to understand that respect is there for the devotees, but we also have the understanding that that devotee who we're respecting is on a certain level, somewhere in the Madhyama Adhikari level, and even he has anarthas because he's a Madhyama Adhikari. He's not an Uttama Adhikari. He's not Uttama Adhikari. Starts partway through bhava and prema, so then obviously he's got very little anartha or no anartha at all, and those in Madhyama would have more anarthas, which generally won't surface, but they may surface. So we see the example of Bharat, who was on bhava stage. He had an anartha and then he fell because of that. But do we criticize Bharat? That was a fault. Criticize him, condemn him. But Nectar Devotion says we don't criticize the person. Even if there's a spot on the moon, we don't criticize it. So we don't criticize the person on bhava stage for his fault. Because it's insignificant in comparison to his advancement or whatever like that. So even from the Madhyama Adhikari level, yeah, could have faults, but we're respecting the person for the bhakti. And we're also not assuming that he is on the highest level. So he could have faults, whatever. That's insignificant in relation to the bhakti. So we respect him for the bhakti. Yeah, unfortunately. We can deal we can't obviously deal in an unfriendly way with everybody else, otherwise they'll think something's wrong with us. So on the surface we can be very friendly, you know, like that. But as far as real intimate association where we begin to regard them as something very special, that we should avoid. Otherwise, we'll start picking up their bad qualities also. Of course, we can do the opposite, and by our influence, they can become better. We can be their satsanga, and they can become devotional also, at least become purified to some degree by our association, by our good conduct, etc. So, we have to keep a little bit of a distance in our friendship as well there. It depends on the situation and the person, I suppose. Some people can absorb by just studying and reading. Other persons, they have to hear it before that they can sinks in their mind or brain or whatever like that. It depends on the person, I think. Of course, we can never deny the direct potency of the spoken word. And that's why we always have a tradition of a parampara where one person teaches the other, he teaches the other, he teaches the other. We have a parampara that way. It's not that we just go back to the book and establish our relationship through to Rupa Goswami directly by reading his books and that's it, and then trace our parampara that way. We go through a parampara. So there is a potency in the individual there because he is a devotee and he's delivering the message. So that gives a particular inspiration. And as well, it can clarify any particular problems that may arise in terms of our study of scripture as well. Whereas if we're on our own, then we're left to speculate about what the meaning may be, and then we may come up with the wrong conclusion also. So it clarifies things, and also there's a certain potency there which is keeps us on the path of bhakti. If we simply study, it may put us into an intellectual mode only, and then we're just getting some intellectual information. So.
But at the same time, Krishna is more like a king in Goloka Vrindavan. He's more like a
Yeah.
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 So in the temple, we have deity worship according to Pancharatrik standards. That's the Vaidhi Bhakti. Yeah? So there's some awe and reverence involved in that and following rules and regulations. So if we are very attached to that forever, then we end up in another place called Aishwarya Goloka, where Krishna's playing his flute, but we also see him as God. So therefore, the alternate is that at a certain point you switch to Raganuga, and then you see Krishna only as a cowherd boy and not as Supreme Lord at all. So that would require Raganuga type attitude of worship, which is more of a personal worship rather than a public worship. One could do it theoretically any time that one develops the greed to follow after the associates of Vrindavan and take them as your main inspiration. That's the technical thing. But of course, generally we recommend it should happen after Nishta and Ruchi or something like that. Well, yeah, so the Paramatma function as witness of all the living entities and giving them their karmas and helping them fulfill their material desires. That's a material function, yeah? In the spiritual world, they don't have any material desires. There's no karma at all. Of course, the Lord is everywhere anyway. In the spiritual world, it's Bhagavan. So that is, there's an inspiration to do bhakti only. That's the nature of the Lord there. And of course, the Lord can manifest Himself anywhere to inspire you.
What is the destination of those who perfect their Paramatma devotion?
Well, generally, these are Paramatma yogis that will meditate on Paramatma. But then they use the Paramatma in order to get liberation. And then they may merge into Paramatma or merge into the effulgence of Paramatma, which is not so nice, either one. So in other words, they basically impersonal. However, the Paramatma yogi, if he is gets good association, he may be a Vaishnava also, in which case then he could advance to worshipping Bhagavan. Paramatma turns into Bhagavan and he establishes a personal relationship. But it may mix his devotion, so it would be like Yoga Mr. Bhakti. So then his realization may be a little limited, so he may end up with Shantarasa, like that. Well, he was a devotee when he was 5 years old, and Narada Muni came to him and told him to worship the Lord, etc. So he got the mercy of Narada Muni. And then he saw the Lord. So if he could see the Lord, he must have been a devotee. Whatever. So he was definitely a great devotee of the Lord. So this whole pastime with the yakshas and all that, we can say is part of a pastime. We can say it's maybe Brahma getting bewildered by the Lord so that he could have his Brahma Mohana Leela. Or like Indra getting bewildered and starting the Govardhan Lila, etc. So we say it's bewilderment by the Lord simply for the pastimes or whatever like that. Okay.